Alrighty, like she said, my name is Charles Hunt Long, go by Hunt actually, and I'm talking today about seed germination response to osmotic stress in corn cultivars, and I'm from Mississippi State. So, according to this first graph, 2017 is a great time to be involved in agriculture. Personally, I think we're just on the verge of a really incredible time to be involved in this industry. So if you look at this graph we have, sourced from the USDA, you see we're producing more food, more corn per acre than essentially ever before. In the history of the world, basically. Why is this? Well, you know, we've had mechanization, we've had pesticides introduced, chemical fertilizers, hybridization of seeds, all kind of incredible stuff. And even after all these advancements, we're still on the verge of a tech and biotech revolution in this industry. One thing I want you to look at, though, on this graph is even though we're producing more food per acre, look at the volatility of the yield, especially over the last 50 years. Now, it's not a graph of the stock market, so why is there so much volatility on a graph like this? Well, this second graph from the EPA gives us a few answers. Most of these fluctuations, the volatility, is caused by abiotic stress. With more times than not, it's actually drought stress. J.S. Boyer authored a paper back in 1982 called Plant Productivity and the Environment. And he stated that there's a large genetic potential for yield that is unrealized due to abiotic stresses. And in that paper, according to Boyer, maize producers in North America alone experience 40% of yearly crop loss due to suboptimal water availability. So where there's great problems, there's great opportunity, right? And the industry has taken note of this. Breeders have introduced drought tolerance genes recently with the claim of they produce higher yields in a drought environment. You have less yield loss due to drought. A couple of these genes include Aquamax, Drought Guard, and Artesian. Key point here, though, is that Drought Guard is the only gene that's actually genetically engineered. The other two are introduced into the corn plant through more traditional breeding methods. So at Mississippi State, we asked if these traits do in fact help increase yield when you have drought stress, where actually in the plant life cycle are these genes showing up? What's actually happening? Because it's easy to go out and plant, you know, field trial and say, oh, well, this variety did better, has a higher yield. Well, why does it do that? You know, if our destination is a higher yield or less yield loss due to drought, what's the roadmap to actually get there? So we decided to systematically break down the life cycle of corn into four stages: germination, early vegetative, late vegetative, and reproductive. This first project is on simply the germination stage. So our prediction was that we predict there will be variation among hybrids in response to drought at the germination stage. We selected six cultivars representing the three different drought genes that I mentioned earlier from three different companies. So we had one with the drought gene and a similar hybrid without a drought gene. We didn't have the exact parental variety. It's kind of hard to get trade secrets from companies. So we had a real similar cultivar to compare it to. Now the hard thing is, how do you test for drought in a seed? You can't just not water the seed, it's not going to germinate, right? And a seed's a sponge, essentially. If you just give it less water, it's going to soak up whatever's there and utilize it. So in order to simulate drought in a seed, we have to understand what exactly is drought. So drought is not the amount of water that's in the soil, it's the water potential for the plant pulling water off the soil particles. There's a lot of bonds going on there between water and soil particles and water particles. So to simulate this, we set up an in vitro experiment, which means in a lab, not out in the field, using polyethylene glycol. We used a PEG 8000 solution. Polyethylene glycol is a really cool chemical. It allows us to create various ranges of osmotic potentials with basically no interference in the biological process. So you could, you know, create osmotic potential with salt, but salt's going to kill a plant. It's not good for it. This picture here is with the kind of the crystalline form before it's been dissolved in water. For any chemists out there, it's what the chemical structure looks like. So these are our treatments on the right-hand side, though. The control, obviously, being no polyethylene glycol mixed in with the solution, and then PEG 1 through 9, and that created an osmotic potential of negative 0.1 through negative 0.9 megapascals. Keep in mind that field capacity is negative 33 kilopascals, 0.033 megapascals, so that falls somewhere between the control and the PEG 1 solution. And permanent wilting point is negative 1.5 megapascals. So we're still in the process of conducting this experiment. We've got to go through more treatments to get all the way to permanent wilting point to kind of get the full spectrum. And a fun fact is PEG is also used as a laxative in the medical industry. So the way we set up our experiment is we had trays. We put 100 seeds per rep. We had 4 reps of each cultivar per treatment. And essentially, we'd lay them out on a sterile cloth and soak them in the solution. And we placed each tray in an incubator at 25 degrees Celsius, which is 75 degrees Fahrenheit, which we determined to be a pretty optimum germination temperature. And we would check these seeds regularly for germination and make sure that they were still saturated with the solution, because we didn't want for the solution to dry up. That would cause unnecessary drought stress to the plant. We wanted the drought stress to be solely from the osmotic potential of the PEG solution. And down here on the bottom, we have a germinated seed versus a non-germinated seed. So we define germination as the plant growing half the length of itself, because obviously you have different seed sizes. And so if the root coming out was half the length of the seed, we determined that to be germinated. And so we took this data that we got and made a cumulative average between the reps of germination, and we plotted that against time. So you can see in this graph, we've got just an example cultivar. And the first line is at the control, and you move down the PEG, different PEG treatments, and kind of immediately visually you can see that there is a decrease. It takes longer for the seeds to germinate. And we did this for every cultivar. You can kind of just get a quick look at how, as we increase drought stress, the germination, it took longer for the seeds to germinate. This is with the Pioneer seeds, the Cab seeds, and the NK seeds. For a statistical analysis, what we did is we calculated maximum seed germination and seed germination rate. I don't have a chart of maximum seed germination at this point because there's no statistical significance through PEG 9. We've got to go all the way to PEG 15 or PEG 16 to really get that full spectrum. But we did calculate the seed germination rate, which we determined to be the time it takes to get to 50% of the maximum seed germination. So this chart, it can be a little confusing to look at though. So on the bottom, the x-axis, we have osmotic potential. So there's essentially more drought as you look at the left and less drought as you approach zero on the right. And on the y-axis, we have the seed germination rate in days. So that's the number of days it takes to get to 50% germination. So essentially, as you approach zero, so there's less drought stress, it takes less days for the seeds to germinate. Looking at this from among the cultivars, the Pioneer seeds, your regression lines are kind of showing that in red we have the drought tolerant corn, and in green we have the non-drought tolerant corn. So the drought tolerant is germinating faster at essentially at no drought, and then as we get to higher drought, it actually starts to germinate slower than the other varieties. The DeKalb varieties, the regression line is showing actually that the drought gene is showing up. It is germinating faster all the way from the control through the drought stress reps. And with the NK seeds, we actually have the non-drought tolerant variety germinating faster at low levels. And until you get to PEG 9, you don't see any benefit of the drought gene, essentially. So in conclusion, our preliminary results show that there may be a connection between drought tolerance genes and the seed germination rate. But we need to continue the experiment all the way through the permanent wilting point to show all osmotic potentials that could be present in the soil. And future research for this too is once we get the full spectrum of the osmotic potentials, we can pick one or two that seem to be really important and screen multiple hybrids across to determine the drought tolerance of many, many different hybrids. And then big picture future research, we want to continue investigating the effect of drought tolerance across cultivars with these genes throughout all stages of corn. If we could find out the parental varieties of these seed varieties with drought tolerance in them, that'd be pretty cool, but it's going to be hard to get those secrets out. And the ultimate goal, obviously, help producers produce more food with less water. And I want to thank Dr. Reddy, my advisor, Chatu, who's a graduate student who served kind of as a mentor in my undergrad research, David Brand, who runs the lab at Mississippi State, and all the other members of the Environmental Plant Physiology Lab. So does anybody have any questions? Yes, sir.
I think of what's going on in the field and how many chemicals, fertilizers, insecticides, you name it, is around that seed or coated on the seed. So you're using a pure seed, but what happens if you were to infuse these other elements that are actually in the field? You really change those curves, I think.
Yeah, you could.
So I'm curious as to whether you've thought about, or your group has thought about the realities of in the field and add that as another dimension and see how these drought tolerant varieties react when they're in the presence of salts,
insecticides,
coatings, and things you don't even know what's going on.
Right, so the question is whether we looked at other elements affecting seed germination. No, we haven't. We specifically did it like this because we're solely looking at the effect of the drought gene. We've had some other experiments on germination where we do look at other factors like that. But for this project, we're trying to basically eliminate all other factors except for the presence of this drought gene.
Yeah, except that those factors are going to affect the performance of the gene. So it's not exclusive. I suspect there'd be an interaction.
Right.
And it would be something worth throwing.
Mm-hmm.
You ask your boss and ask him.
Yes, sir.
You know, you want to be pure, right. But the reality of it is the world's not pure.
Right.
Biasing results.
Right. Yeah, this is just step one of the full spectrum of everything we got to get. any further questions? Yes, ma'am.
Charging it to the financial system, do you have an approximate yield rate for how much corn is actually being grown in Mississippi?
Yeah, Mississippi fluctuates a lot. I guess everybody's favorite crop in Mississippi is cotton. And soybeans is a big one. Corn, it varies from year to year. Right now with prices being down, a lot of growers are leaning toward more soybeans. And with cotton prices being a little bit more stable, cotton acres have really increased. So it really fluctuates from year to year. I think this year it may have been around like 300,000 acres, with the majority being in the Delta region. Go into a little more geography the state of Mississippi, but but it fluctuates though year to year. Any further questions?
That's all the time we have.
Oh, cool. Thank you.